Good afternoon, or rather good evening, and welcome to Lakeshore Public Radio at 89.1 FM on the dial. I'm Tom Lounges, and we are streaming worldwide at www.lakeshorepublicradio.org. This program, Midwest Beat, is all about music and the people who make it. And tonight, we've got a very special guest. She's a singer, songwriter, producer. She has, she wears many hats, and she has a brand new album out now called Mercy Rising. I'm talking about Maya Sharp. Maya Sharp has quite the story. She recently moved to Nashville from L.A., and it has affected her music. We're going to talk to her. We're going to feature stuff from her new album, Mercy Rising, which comes out in May. You'll get to hear it first. It's all coming up after your headlines right here on Midwest Beat and Lakeshore Public Radio. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for supporting Public Radio. I'm Tom Lounges, and it's time now for Lakeshore Public Radio's Midwest Beat with yours truly. Midwest Beat is a program all about music and the people who make it. Well, tonight, I've got veteran singer, songwriter, and recording artist, Maya Sharp. Maya Sharp has been playing music and writing songs since a very young age. Her career path has, kept her in the family business, so to speak. She has written for a who's who of great celebrities and performers over the years of all different styles, and she's got a brand new album out of her own, and it comes out on May 7th. The album's called Mercy Rising, and we're going to feature some songs from it and talk to Maya in just a few minutes. She may not be a household name yet, but you're going to enjoy this talented singer-songwriter, one of the finest in the business today. Let's start off with a song, and let's start off with one that has already been released digitally. You'll know who knows you, and soon you'll know Maya Sharp.
I know to close the window and put a record on down the hall. You said once you like the echo off the hardwood, and you don't care much for candles or a body like a Barbie doll or feeling misunderstood. If you're wondering, you won't be wondering tomorrow. Slow dance, slow in a kaleidoscope, glow of a lava lamp. Tell a story to the walls. You won't have to
you'll know who knows you. And right now, you're getting to know Maya Sharp. That's new music. That's track number 2 on her newest album, Mercy Rising. And that's one of them that's been released digitally. But you don't get the whole 12 songs until May 7th when it comes out on CD and will be released digitally as well. And it was here on NPR Radio that I first heard Maya's music. She's made appearances on Mountain Stage on PBS, World Cafe, which follows this program here on Lakeshore, and of course on All Things Considered, which is a staple in the NPR market. And now she's here on Midwest Beat, and I'm very excited because it makes me feel full circle. I discovered this great talent so many years back on All Things Considered, and now she's here talking with us on Lakeshore. Maya, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Tom.
I got to say, I really, really am enjoying this album. As we were emailing earlier, there's not a bad song on this. I mean, and I love the sequencing on it. I love the flow of this album.
Thank you.
It's a little different than things I've heard from you in the past. So let's talk about some of the changes you've made recently is moving from Los Angeles to Nashville. And you're recording there now, which is a completely different vibe from what you have in L.A., at least in most cases. What was it like for you to change geographically, and what was the prompt for that?
Well, just about everything that could have changed, changed. My personal life also changed. My marriage of 21 years ended. And so that was a huge shift. And, that was a little push out of L.A. And then the pull to Nashville had been there for a while. I had been coming here to write for years, but I wasn't quite sure that it was the time to move here until the beginning of 2019. And I actually have recorded another album here. I made my album Fine a Standing Citizen here also. So I had a nice community of folks here, but it's always different as a resident. You know, the traveler gets one experience and the resident has another one. And so I needed to learn what that, you know, kind of new life here was going to be.
Well, Fine Upstanding Citizen was, 16, 17 years ago, right?
yeah.
Things have changed. Technology, everything has changed. I'm sure your base of musicians has changed. So this had to be, again, a new experience in many ways.
Well, yes, definitely. And yes. It was, as far as the musicians, as far as my love of just being in the room with humans playing music, that is still the same. Okay. And I feel very fortunate that I went into the studio at the end of 19. It was kind of right in time, just before it would have been really hard, to do that. So it all started, I called my buddy Joshua Grange, who is a great electric guitar player, steel guitar player, really anything. He plays keyboard too. And he has a great studio here called Resistor Studio. So I called him and let him know that I wanted to make a record. And he had a drummer and a bass player that he had just recently played with that play together a lot. And he said that the three of them had just locked in right away on something. So I knew that I was in a city with a ton of great players, but there's always that X factor of, yeah, they're great, but will they play great together? Mm-hmm. And Josh kind of saw that for me when he introduced me to Ross McReynolds on the drums and Will Honaker. And I just trusted Josh. And so the four of us went in, and in 3 days, we tracked this whole album at Josh's place. And then I took those files back to my place and, you know, kind of work in the cave, as I call it, and just took all the time that I needed. And I finished it out with vocals and acoustic and whirly and piano. So that's kind of the best hybrid for me. I love to get the real-time human energy, and then I get to come back here and try to find all of those little, you know, signatures for the songs and take as many hours as I need to do that.
Well, this album being very personal because of your personal life and the new change in the geography and working with new musicians for the first time, lots of variables involved, which makes me wonder at any point, since you were the writer, the performer, the arranger, and then you step in and wear your production hat. So now you're the producer of all 12 songs. Do you ever feel that maybe you're a little too close to the music to be objective? I mean, how do you separate Maya the songwriter, Maya the performer, and Maya saying, okay, well, will the listeners get what I'm trying to do here? Do you have some fresh ears somewhere that you bounce things off of?
Oh, yes, always. I love to be on a team. 10 of the 12 were co-written with other writers, so I get that. The two songs, which are the last two, track 11 and track 12, that I wrote alone, I kind of treat myself as a co-writer. I start the song and then I walk away from it for a while. I come back and I see if the slightly older me still really likes the song, and then I walk away again. So I kind of, you know, I do create a sounding board in all of those situations. And then, you know, just like I said with the band, like, I really want other humans in the room. If I did this whole thing, like, in the box where I'm creating everything, I'm, you know, sampling the drums, I'm doing all of that, that probably would have driven me insane. So having their musical input at that stage, having the co-writers on the record, all of that is really, really essential for me to not just go totally bonkers. Because this one is the truest one of all the records. Like, I am just laying it all out there, leaving it all on the field right. on this one. So I did have the potential to be more emotionally fragile. So it was probably extra helpful to have those other people around.
Did you ever think at any point you're putting too much out there? You're basically standing naked in front of your public saying, this is me. This is me. This is all my emotions spilling out.
Well, you know, I used to think that. Like, I used to choose not to be so just, here's my story exactly how it happened. I always had this little voice in the back of my mind, like, who gives a,
right?
You know, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
Probably not.
Okay, probably not. So, you know, I always had that going on. But recently, relatively recently, past 4 years, I've been writing with an organization called Songwriting with Soldiers.
Right.
And it pairs a service member, veteran, and or family member with a songwriter. And we hear their very true, hard, real stories. And it's, you know, our job is to make a song out of that. But they're showing up with those. And the sharing of that story, the people that are reached, that hear that story, that thought that they were alone, and now they know that they're not. The ripple effect that it makes when somebody shares a hard, true thing, that has had such an impact on me that I thought, you know what? I just need to stay real. Let's just see what happens. And I'm not feeling that, you know, who really cares thing. And right. I'm also not feeling that, like, am I going too far? Can I be brave enough thing? Because I've been in the rooms with people that are just intensely brave. And I've seen how effective that is and how many people can be reached by a real story. Even if you can't directly identify with all of the details, just the sharing of something true mm-hmm. can have such an impact that it's like, yeah, I need to do that.
Songwriting with Soldiers is a really unique situation and program, and I just started hearing about it not long ago. Some of my favorite songwriters, Beth Nielsen Chapman, Marshall Crenshaw, mm-hmm. Darden Smith, all very strong, powerful songwriters, taking time out of their career to work with these soldiers. And how did you get involved? And how again, obviously, it's allowing you to bear more of your soul because you're seeing they're opening their wounds, basically, writing songs of some of the horrible things they've seen and done and whatever. So you've already explained that it affected you that way. But how did you get involved? What made you say, yeah, this is for me?
Actually, the last name that you just listed, Darden Smith, is a friend. And we wrote together probably 10 years ago now. And he called me. he's one of the founders of Songwriting with Soldiers. And he called me and he's like, hey, I'm doing this thing. Are you interested? And I remember it scared the hell out of me. The idea of sitting in that room and having a short amount of time. This is, you know, the really scary part. We do this in somewhere between 2 and 2.5 hours. We meet then and hear the story and write the song. And that's just not how I've ever worked. I've always taken a day or a week, or, you know, I step away, I come back, you know, a couple weeks later. So it was so scary that I knew I had to say yes.
Okay. Jump off the deep end, so to speak.
Because I would always wonder, like, is this something that maybe I could have done that I didn't think I could? So I started doing that, I think it was August of 17, and it's just become more and more of a deeper learning experience for me.
Now, have any of the songs you've co-written with any of these soldiers ever made it to anyone's album, whether it's yours or someone else's that you've shopped? Has any of these songs, is it something that we might be able to hear the fruition of your efforts?
Well, you can hear recordings. You can hear the recordings that we have done of them on songwritingwithsoldiers.org.
Okay.
All of the songs that are written at the retreats are up there. They haven't been pitched. They haven't been worked like that. Mary Gaucher has an album full of songs that she wrote there. But otherwise, they've been kind of treated more as, you know, a private affair. We did have a PBS show last year where you can hear some of them. They don't really go through the regular channels of, like, you know, let's see if another artist is going to record them or not. It might shift at some point, but at this point it's still kind of staying on the personal tip.
Do you get to choose which soldiers you're going to work with, or are you guys kind of assigned, like a class, like you're going to work with John and Darden's going to work with, you know, with Carl, or how does it work?
Well, we all meet on the first night, and then, you know, we just kind of get a sense, like, hey, you know, it'd be cool to work with this guy, but it really kind of shakes out however it will. It's like, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I'm always fine with writing with any of the veterans, and it's always a rich experience. We've also been dropping into a program called the Warrior Path, which is PATHH, Progressive and Alternative Training for Healing Heroes. And the format on that one is that one songwriter shows up and writes with the entire group, which is up to 8 people. And so there are 8 stories flying around, and we have to harness that.
Wow.
And make that into a song. Again, scared the hell out of me. It kind of does every time, but I roll up every time like, well, it worked the last 15 times, so maybe this isn't the time that I suck.
Right, right. Know? Let's do it again.
Here we go. And it's just so empowering and inspiring to hear them and to see them show up like that.
I just pulled the website up, and again, listeners, it's songwritingwithsoldiers.org, and the homepage mm-hmm. has a beautiful panoramic shot of all of you up on stage singing. You're mm-hmm. off to the left there a little bit, and I've got to look this up. I mean, we have a TV PBS station connected to our radio show here, and I was unaware of this. This was last year you said this came out?
I think so. It could have been 2 years. I'm obviously really bad with time because I did not realize the Fine Standing Citizen was that long ago. it's all just kind of blurring together. But, yeah, okay. I feel like it was 1 or 2 years ago.
All right. One of the things I mentioned in the beginning of the show is you've kind of followed in the family business, so to speak, because a mm-hmm. lot of folks may not realize your dad is Randy Sharp, 3-time Grammy yeah. winner, singer, songwriter, guitarist, and producer like you. So like dad, you're wearing many hats and you have written for a who's who of incredible talent. I mean, the two of you together, you could fill a record store with the amount of artists you've worked with, basically, in one form or another. How did you come to do this? Is this in the DNA? Is this something that you chose early on? Is this something the folks guided you into? You have basically, in many ways, become the female version of your dad.
Well, I mean, music was just always in the house. Mom and dad met in high school, and they were singing together in a band early on. It was just, there was just always music. It was a very music-centric house. They never pushed me that way, though. I think I always knew I was going to do something in the field. I wasn't sure what. I had a couple of unusual starts, like oboe was the first instrument that I played.
Wow, never would have guessed that.
I know, that's kind of out of the blue. And then I went over to saxophone, and I majored in saxophone. I went to college as that, thinking that that's what I was going to do. And I worked a bunch around Los Angeles, and I toured a little bit in like horn sections and doing that thing. And it was really fun, but there was something about it that wasn't quite everything. So about 3 years into college, I started to write songs that were more along the lines of the music that I grew up listening to. And in my house, we were listening to Bonnie Raitt and Paul Simon, Jackson Browne, Ricky Lee Jones, Joni Mitchell. You know, that's where my heart was. So I had to kind of figure out, okay, I want to write more along those lines. And it took me a while, and I'm sure those first handful of songs were not great, but I finally kind of found a stride with it, and that quickly became my new first love.
When did you first start writing songs? Well, you mentioned your first ones might not have been the best, but when did you first sit down and say, I'm going to write a song, just like Dad?
Well, my very, very first song is when I was 5.
Wow.
And Dad was ready with a tape recorder, and he recorded it.
Of course he was.
And it's on the very end of my second album, my self-titled album. And it's me singing when I'm 5. And I have like a Southern drawl, which I can't really figure out how that happened. We were living in California, so I don't know what my deal was. But and then I didn't really write. So I wrote poetry and played instruments and kind of fooled around with, you know, whatever was around the house, which was a lot of things, like a little bit of piano, a little bit of guitar. Then I got to school and started on the horn. But I didn't really get serious again about writing until I was probably 20.
Okay.
And then it just became everything.
And that's when you got into guitar and piano, correct?
Yeah, I started writing on piano. My first record was mostly piano, and then I needed to shake it up a little bit. I kind of found myself going to the same places on the piano, and I needed to find some new ways to think, and went over to the guitar, and now that's kind of my primary.
Okay. Okay. Now you started when you were young, and when did you decide that this was going to be what you were going to do for a living, for a career? Obviously, music was a big part of your life, but at some point the bell had to go off and say, I could make a living and enjoy this. When did that happen? Was it in the college years?
Well, knowing that I would make a living and that this was my calling, something in music was who I was. That was really early on. That was like as soon as I started the instrument.
Okay.
Like, am I going to be an oboe player in the Philharmonic? Am I going to be a saxophone player playing around town? I knew it was going to be music related. So when I found the songwriting, it was okay. This is how I get in. You know, this is what I want to do. And the first things that happened, you know, the first kind of returns that I got, were in 1996, 1997, and they came at kind of at the same time of having another artist record my song, but also getting an opportunity to make my own album. And they came right around the same time. And ever since then, since the very beginning, I've tried to nurture both sides.
Okay.
So I love writing for other artists. My very first cut was with Cher. It was like, oh my God, this voice that I've been hearing, you know, my whole life is singing my lyrics. I'm totally hooked. And then I also get to make albums. So I've been trying to straddle that fence since then.
One of the things that I thought was interesting looking over some of your materials was Bonnie Raitt was a very important influence on you, it seems, and you can hear some of that in your earlier stuff especially. And then she wound up recording a few of your songs, so, and you've toured with her. So what was it like? Oh, did you have one of those aha moments, those stare deer in the headlight moments when you walked on stage or you walked backstage and there was Bonnie, the woman you admired, and suddenly she's like, hey, thanks for that song.
Oh, there's been a series, countless, like, oh my God, what is even happening right now kind of moments. Like, this is crazy that this person that I've just loved for so long has chosen. I mean, I felt such a connection to her music, and for her to choose three of my songs, put them on her album, sing the hell out of them, of course, as she does, told me that she felt a connection to me too. That level of validation is just like, I don't know how to match that like ever again. The first time I met her, she had emailed and told me that she was going to record these songs. And hey, could I maybe come into the studio and sing a harmony on one and maybe even recreate some of the horn stuff and the saxophone stuff that I did on another? Let me think about it. Right. Like, of course. So I walk into the studio and Bonnie is in the lobby. This is the first time that we met. I will never forget it. She's in the lobby of the studio. This is in Los Angeles. She's the only one there. And she turns around and she throws her arms open and she goes, Maya, it's so great to meet you. And no words. What's right. even happening? And this is the beginning of working together. So our studio experience led to me sitting in with her on one song, and then that went well enough for her to ask me to open for her, and now we're really good friends, and it's unreal.
Wow. Let's play another song for the listeners. What would you like to play off the new album?
I heard You'll Know Who Knows You. Have you played anything else off of
nope,
it?
No, that's been it so far. That's okay. So far. That was what we opened with, so we can do any of the others.
How about we do Whatever We Are? Are you down with that one?
Sure. That's a great one, too.
Right. This is the first single. I co-wrote it with my buddies Thomas Fincham and Anna Schulze.
All right, we'll be back with Maya on the other side of this. Check it out. Never new music from Mercy Rising.
Just not today. The first of our kind or the oldest cliche. Right down the middle or missed it by far. I love you. In the habit or up in the doze, two airplanes flying uncomfortably close, leftover light from a long gone star. I love you, whatever we are, and we've been. Just like breaking my heart. Loving someone forever, whatever we are, you'll make me better. You'll break my heart. I'll love you forever, whatever we are.
Whatever we are. New music from Mercy Rising. It's the brand new album coming out on May 7th. From my guest, Maya Sharp. And Maya, is this going to be on vinyl by chance, or is it strictly CD and digital?
It is going to be on vinyl. Thank you for asking.
Yes.
Now that I have tasted the vinyl, I am making the fiscally irresponsible choice to press vinyl on all of my albums.
Good. Yes, I own two record stores, and that's why I ask. I'm always thrilled. We will sell your records, ferociously, definitely.
Thank
I have two
you.
Here in Indiana, yes. and I love it because people are so turned on by vinyl, and it sounds so much better today than it did back then because the 180 gram with the wider grooves, and you get two albums mm-hmm. instead of one because everything, all that sound is just living in those grooves, and as the needle drops, It's a warm feeling for those that came up in the CD era only. You owe it to yourself to go up and pick up these things. Take the CD with you for the car or whatever, but get that vinyl out there. I'm so glad you're going to stamp these things. So all your stuff is coming out.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that,
you want it.
Now on, I'm going to do it. And
okay.
Vinyl is, yes, it is in process. I'm sure that
mm-hmm.
there's been a little bit of a delay because of the pandemic. So it's coming a little later than the May 7th release.
Okay.
But it will be here probably just a couple weeks after that.
Excellent.
And I mean, I'm going to go a step further and say the way that they master the album for vinyl as opposed to for CD is just, it's less compressed, it's warmer, it's just a beautiful audio experience. So yeah, I'm in for vinyl too.
Wow. Now, do you keep that in mind when you're producing, when you're in the studio saying, okay, this is not going to be all compressed onto a CD or an MP3, I'm going to make vinyl. So is there a different mindset that you go into when you're producing?
You know, I know people who do that. I wasn't thinking like that. I was going to leave that up to my mix engineer and the mastering engineer, both of whom are ridiculously talented. Ryan Hewitt mixed the album, and Yes Master, which is one of the coolest names for a mastering lab, mastered it. And I knew that as long as I was like true to the vision of the recording, they were going to make it work for either place.
Okay.
And yeah, they did. So,
will you have any bonus stuff for the vinyl, or will it be the same 12 tracks?
Vinyl will be the same 12, yeah. I'm kind of treating that 12th song as the bonus. That's the kind of, quote-unquote, hidden track.
Okay.
Even though it's not just
quite hiding
there 15 seconds later, yes.
We were talking earlier about how you wear all these different hats when making music. It's time for me to ask you to kind of separate that. If of the three, of the performing, of the writing, and of the producing, is there one hat that you are most comfortable or most enjoy doing? Can you pick one of the three? If you could only do one of those, which would it be?
Writing?
Okay.
That's what fuels me. That's what... I guess I could say that's the one that I miss the quickest when I'm doing the other things.
Okay.
I really just need to get back to writing, Yeah, that's really at the heart of it all. I was just talking to a friend of mine who's a singer-songwriter. Like, sometimes I want to identify as a songwriter-singer instead of a singer-songwriter because I have a number of friends that are just wonderfully talented, but they look at it kind of from the opposite way. Like, they want to write the song so they can get up on stage and sing it. They're more about the performance of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got up on stage in the first place in 1995 or whenever I started to perform, because of the song, because I realized that I can maybe get other artists to record some of these if I work really hard at that, but I know that I'm going to write more often and I'm going to have more songs that if I don't get up and perform them, they will never be heard. So
okay.
I better get up and perform them. So I was coming from the writer perspective first, for sure.
All right. Close. How motherly, if I may say, do you feel to these songs that are your babies, that to let them go? Do you ever say, I really don't want anyone else to sing that? That's my song. And especially this album. You're so close to the songs here. Do you ever feel that, I don't want to say regret, but that reluctance to release it to someone else?
Never. Okay. I love that. I love when somebody says that they relate to one of my songs so intensely that they want to record it and they want to sing it. If they can give one of my songs another life, and that's the beauty of it. Like, it doesn't mean that I can't sing it. It might just like have this whole other journey. You know, I am always honored when that happens. And I can say that because I've been very lucky that the people that have recorded my songs have done a really good job and have presented a killer product. Like, I've never been embarrassed about a cut. I've always been really thrilled by it. I have other songwriter friends that are like, hey, I got this cut, but don't go listen to it. It's okay. I've been really lucky that everybody that has chosen to do my song.
Well, that makes
a wonderful job.
That makes my next question a little awkward. I was going to say, of all those, you have had your songs recorded, as you mentioned, Cher, Bonnie Raitt, Dixie Chicks, Lisa Loeb, Paul Carrack, all these different people have been involved. Is there one or two that stand out of all these that you love that you say, man, they really hit the mark on that? That song is their song now. It's no longer mine. It's their song. They made it their own. Their fingerprints are all over it.
Well, you know, I need to say up front that some of those are songs that I wrote with the artist. Like,
okay.
The Paul Carrack song, I wrote with Paul. Lisa Loeb and I wrote together. Edwin McCain and I wrote those songs for him together. So it already is theirs in those cases. The Bonnie Raitt, Chicks, I didn't write those with them. And they both just knocked it over the center field wall. I mean, I was so just filled up by what they did. I guess if I had to choose, it would be the Chicks Home, which I wrote with my dad, which was just such a family victory. We wrote that song really not knowing where it might land. It's not like we wrote it for them. We just wrote a song that we really love.
Mm-hmm.
Turn it in to my publisher, Major Bob, and Scott Sherrod over there just like hit the pavement and got it recorded. And the Bonnie Raitt, first of all, anything that Bonnie sings, I mean, she could sing the Phone Book and I'm in, right?
True.
But one of my songs called The Bed I Made, when Bonnie Raitt sang The Bed I Made, just Meltdown USA. Like, that's just ridiculous. So, yeah, the Chicks doing Home and Bonnie doing The Bed I Made were two
standouts.
Were two moments for me that, like, kept me fueled for a really long time. Like, even if things didn't go as well for a while, I could just say, but you know what? Remember Bonnie and the Chicks? I'm okay. You know?
That reminds me a little bit of, I was interviewing Gretchen Peters not too long ago.
And she's great.
Isn't she? She was talking a little bit about Independence Day. She goes, at this point, I've seen her perform it. She's recorded it, and she does a great job. But you just can never get Martina out of your head when you hear that song. Now, she has really made that her own as well. And Gretchen's like, I was happy to let it go. It found a good home in Martina.
Yeah, I mean, why would you ever get in the way of that?
Right.
And it doesn't mean that you can't go do your own thing with it. But, I mean, don't you want it to, like, have this alternate life that's probably more famous than you? You know?
Right.
That's all good.
Let's do another song. I'm partial to Back Burner.
Great.
That one, you know, it makes me, as I listened to that, I thought, gosh, how many times have I put people in my life on the back burner? You know, and it, you start listening to it, it's like, oh, you're burning the place down. I better not put them on that back burner. Tell me the story behind this one.
Well, it's funny. My co-writer, Anna Schulze, and I started this a while ago, and kind of like the song says, it was put on the back burner a little bit. It was like, okay, we really like it, but not really sure where it's going to land. And when I started looking at songs for this album, I felt like I kind of need one more that's, you know, got a drive to it and, you know, kind of a bite to it. And we have this song that's almost finished. Maybe just, you know, if we dig back in and finish it. So I called her up and we did. We wrote that last verse and we made a couple of tweaks and it ended up being one of the favorites on the album. And now it's the radio single. It's going for ads May 3rd. So, yeah, it was on the back burner and it just wouldn't stand for that.
All right, this is it. We're going to play this. We'll be back with Maya Sharp right after this on Midwest Beat. Check it out.
I tried to put you on the back burner, let you simmer on low, while I tended to the party and the overflow, so you wouldn't boil over. I'd give a little stir, maybe take a little taste just to make sure it's a hell of a on fire. The party got awkward. I hope I didn't let them down. I just couldn't keep my cool with you dancing around. And there's still champagne and I still want you. And maybe I was hoping this is what you'd do.
Flames Up Higher on the back burner. That is a new radio single from my guest Maya Sharp off Mercy Rising. And Maya, how are you going to shop that? I'm listening to that going like, well, where does that fit in radio today? Is it more triple A? Because it's not really country. And obviously NPR will take anything good. Good is the criteria for us. Doesn't matter if the box people put it in. Which is why you've always had a home here. But marketing that, how do you market that?
Yeah, that is definitely AAA and Americana. So those would be our genre. Yeah.
All right. One thing I do want to talk about, and I know we're running tight on time here, and this is something that I was fascinated by. Not only are you doing the writing, songwriting with soldiers, but you are also conducting songwriter workshops. You are an adjunct professor at NYU. So as a professor of songwriting, what is the first lesson that a novice songwriter should know? I mean, give us that nugget for those that are out there saying, you know, I've got a lot of poetry I'd like to write. What is the most important lesson from out of the gate?
Okay, first of all, hearing myself being referred to as a professor is still very surreal. I'm only a professor for about 2 weeks a year. Okay. Unfortunately, the nugget is that there isn't a nugget.
Oh, okay.
You just have to do it. It's flight hours. The way that we conduct the workshop is, you know, they bring their song and we act kind of as if we are the co-writers. Like, okay, well, if I was in the room with you while you were creating this song, this is where I would go with it. What are you really trying to say? Let's make sure that that's a little more clear. It's a very in progress thing, and it just requires writing and writing. It kind of goes back to what I said earlier. Like, I'm sure that my first handful of songs should never see the light of day, and they will never see the light of day. but they were my flight hours. Like, I just, you know, you just have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no like hard and fast rule. And that's kind of the beauty of it too. There's no hard and fast rule. There's no like, I mean, some of my favorite artists break, you know, the traditional forms and, you know, surprise you right when you feel like you're cruising and then you take a hard left turn. Like, I wouldn't want to ever assign a rule to that or, you know, like something to always keep in mind, because there really is no always.
Mm-hmm.
It's different every time.
So you approach it almost like a improvisation, like a jazz player might, or like Bob Dylan does, where he constantly it's an evolving song. It's got a life of its own, where you may hear it Thursday and then on Sunday it'll sound a little bit different.
Well, it's more like every song is its own thing. So
okay.
let's figure out what that song is really. Like, what do you really want to get out of that song? What are you trying to achieve? Who are you trying to talk to? What are you trying to get across? What's important to you as the songwriter? And let's, like, help you see that, you know, all the way through. And when you do your job, like, when it's really good, it will hold up and it will be the same on Thursday as it was on Sunday.
Okay. One of the things, as you're writing the songs, and as a print journalist myself, I will sit there and I'll write my feature, and I come back the next morning to proofread it, and I'm like, I don't like the way I said that, and we'll redo the whole paragraph. When do you know, as a songwriter, when to leave it alone? When it's as good as it's going to be, when to stop tweaking the lyrics or the melodies or whatever, and how hard is it for you to say, it's done, I got to leave it now?
Yeah. My process, I'm sure every songwriter has his or her own thing, but mine is that I know that I'm there when I've gone a click too far.
Okay.
I always feel when I've pushed it a little too far, like, oh, it's starting to get a little trite, or it's over explaining or whatever. Like, when I go to the other side of the peak of the mountain, I realize that I was just at the peak of the mountain and now I can identify it. And so I dial it back, and then I know that I'm, you know, finished. But I definitely work every single angle. I try everything until I reach that point where I know it's been exhausted. This idea that I have has been completely vetted, and it's like, and I know that I have wrung it out and gotten everything out of it, and personally, I know that when I go a little too far.
Okay. How are you going to market this as far as touring now? Now that the COVID numbers are dialing back a little bit and some markets are opening, Are you comfortable? Are you ready to get back on the road? And if so, will you be doing this with accompaniment? Will it be a girl and her guitar, a girl and her piano? Will it be a full band? What's the game plan at this point?
The game plan right now is a solo show. If I have my way, it'll be piano and the guitar, which means I'm probably in the car. So I need to be able to drive places, which is actually another huge advantage to living in Nashville and Los Angeles. Often my tours would start with a flight, which changes a lot of the dynamic. So now in Nashville, or from here, I can
go anywhere,
have a little more flexibility. Yeah. So yeah, it'll be me and the guitar and the piano. I do feel comfortable getting out there. I'm starting to look at some shows at the end of the year, October and November. I had the virus in March of 2020, and I still had antibodies as of like a month ago.
Wow.
And I will be fully vaccinated by the middle of May. I'll be like free and clear in that way. So I feel like I'm okay to get back out there. Yeah, I mean, I know, you know, there's so many X factors, like how does the audience feel? Like, are my people going to feel okay about getting out there and doing that again? Are the venues taking the precautions? So yeah, there's a lot of fluidity and just kind of being open to whatever, like city by city, how it's going to play out.
Right now, Indiana's doing pretty well. We're almost 100%, whereas Michigan and Illinois are not. So if you're going to come to the Midwest, come see us.
I will. I promise.
We'd love to. I've got a couple of venues that would be perfect for you out here that I could suggest.
Oh, great.
Is there anything, Maya, that we haven't touched on? I want to get to when the world doesn't end, but I want to make sure we cover everything you wanted to.
I think that you covered it. As far as the world doesn't end, my buddy PJ Pacifico and I wrote that, and he's singing with me, and this was so fun to work with him. I mean, I've loved him for years. Our voices are so completely different, but somehow they blend well. And that was just such a cool thing to find out. So,
will this be released as a radio single at some point, you think?
This was actually already a single. This is out there. Oh, a radio single. No, we're probably just going to do the one radio single before we do the full album.
Okay.
Yeah. But When the World is out there now as a digital single, so you can hear it on Spotify and, you know, iTunes and all that stuff.
Okay. Listeners, you can keep up with Maya at mayasharp.com, and that's M-A-I-A, mayasharp.com. And also be sure to check out songwritingwithsoldiers.org. Some fabulous songwriters there are doing a great service to our military. Maya, thank you so much for being with us today and giving me so much time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right.
For playing the tune.
We'll do it again sometime soon, and we'll get you out here to Indiana and Chicagoland very soon.
Okay, great.
Mercy Rising is the album. It comes out in full on May 7th, and this is our final track tonight, When the World Doesn't End. Let's hope it's not going to end anytime soon. I'm Lounges. I'm out of here. Adios.
I used to wish I could be somewhere else. It's a big city in a small town. I put a little makeup on to reinvent myself. Checking every subway car to see if you are there. I used to dance around the circle of your friends. Take the longer way I know you wouldn't take. And no narrow one-way streets and no dead ends. So if I saw you, I wouldn't have to go through it. We didn't see the corner.